Hello and welcome back to Talking Talmud. I'm Ann Gordon here with my friend and chavruta here, Dana Osband. Our daf of the day, Masachet Bav Metzia, daf nun hey, page 55. Our daf has two mishnayot. We're going to ping pong them. We're going to keep it short. We know people's time these days is very precious. Ha'ona, I'm in the mishnah on the first on Amar Aleph. Ha'ona'a arba'a kesef, v'ata'ana shtei kesef. It's really very neatly organized here. So ona'a, when you're talking about taking advantage of somebody, the measure of taking advantage of somebody is 4 silver ma'a of the 24 silver ma'a of a sela, which we had talked about before, meaning it's, you know, you have to overprice somebody, you know, by this amount, 4 out of 24. The ta'ana, meaning the smallest claim that can be made, a monetary claim that can be made in court, where you would have the plaintiff would have to be, where the plaintiff can get the, I don't know what we call it, it's not really a defendant, right? But the respondent to take an oath, that's 2 silver ma'a as compared to the 4, right? Meaning you can still come to somebody and say, you need to swear to me that you haven't done any kinds of exploitation or whatever, for 2 ma'a, 2 silver ma'a. And hoda'a, the smallest admission that one can say, you know, I owe you or I don't owe you, it specifically, right, that yes, I owe you this amount of money, is the value of 1 pruta. We have seen cases where a half a pruta really didn't count for anything. 1 pruta is kind of the smallest amount of monetary value that is, it's almost negligible, but it's not so negligible that it literally doesn't count. The Mishnah goes on, Chamesh Prutotain. Just in case you wanted to know, the Tana mentions here that there's 5 different halachic situations that have that revolve around the case of a pruta. Namely, Ha'oda'a Shava Pruta, right? This kind of admission to a claim, it has to be the value of 1 pruta. Va'isha mitkadeshet b'shava pruta. We remember this from Kiddushin, right? That a woman is betrothed with the value of 1 pruta. Va'ne'ane b'shava pruta min ha'hekdesh ma'al. If you were to take benefit from that which has been consecrated in the value of 1 pruta, then you have desecrated the consecrated property that you got benefit from. Somebody who finds an item that is worth the value, it's very not a costly item at all, but if it's worth the value of 1 pruta, you have to, you know, declare, you know, call out that you have found this thing and the people should come forward and claim it. And when you have somebody who steals an item from another party, where that item is the value of a pruta, and the thief then takes an oath that he says he didn't rob anything, and then he feels bad and he repents and he wants to return the stolen item that was worth a pruta, he has to take it and follow the owner, and then it says he should go after him even to Madai. We saw this language previously, right? The idea being he can't just like go find the original owner by a messenger. He has to actually, you know, track the original owner down. And all of this is, again, for this minimal value that still counts as being something, right? This is the last case of the 5 cases of the Pruta. In the interest of time, we're going to jump over this Gemara. Yerdan, I'm going to send you to the Mishnah. I just want to make the one comment that, of course, the Gemara is going to delve into what are these 5, you know, as much as we've gotten this list of 5 halachic situations, then there's going to be discussion on them, you know, from the Amoraim, exactly as you would expect.
Okay. I'm going to move on then, because I'm obsessed with the fifths, as I talked about it yesterday. And now we get the Mishnah, which, you know, in typical Gemara fashion, this is the Mishnah that we needed yesterday when we talked about the fits. But now we finally talk about what halachic categories have the charge of the fit. Chamisha chumshinhein. And of course, it's 5 things that get charged to fit. I thought that was kind of funny, Anne. I don't know about you. Okay.
Yeah, Eilu, okay.
And what are the 5? Ha'ochel truma, right? If a non-kohen eats truma, the trumat maser or trumat maser. So remember, trumat maser was the maser that was given to Levium, right? The Levium had to separate truma out for that for the Kohanim as well. Utrumat maser al demai, or trumat maser of demai. So the Mishnah discusses only trumat maser of demai, but not truma of maser. is produce that you're not sure is taken from, okay? So if you accidentally ate that, you still would have to give the fifth because you're not sure if truma was taken or not taken from it. Now, the question is, why does the Mishnah only talk about truma at maser of Danai, but not truma of maser? And that's because the rabbis basically saw that even Amei Ha'aretz, right? This is the concept of the Am Ha'aretz, which is a whole interesting halachic category, which sort of is, people who are like, let's say, not as meticulous about halacha. But even those people, they were very careful to make sure to separate truma from their produce. So they didn't really ever have to make sure that truma was separated from demai.
V'chala, right? So chala is the dough that you had to separate out for the kohanim. V'ha bikurim. And also bikurim, which, the first fruits that had to be brought. Mosif chomesh. So you have to add a fifth, right? This is, you need to add this charge of a fifth. V'hapodet netza revi'i u'maser sheni shelo. And if somebody redeems his fourth year fruit, right? So the fourth year fruit is talking about in Vayikra chapter 19, verses 23 through 24. If you have a newly planted tree, right? This is the mitzvah of Orla. The first 3 years, it's forbidden to use it. And you actually burn the fruit. And that's called Orla. The fifth year, it's called netza revi'i, right? It's the fourth year fruit. You can use it, but the restriction is that it has to be eaten in Yerushalayim or it has to be redeemed using coins. After that's done, the fruit can be eaten anywhere. And then, if you do it with the coins, and then the redemption money is taken to Yerushalayim, similar to Maser Sheni, and you have to purchase food there. So if you redeem your Netzer Revi or your Maser Sheni, Mosif Chomesh, you have to add a Chomesh. You have to add a chomesh to it. Hapoda at hegsho. If somebody redeems his own consecrated things, mosif chomesh, he has to add a fifth. Hanehanesh of a pruta mina hegdesh. If somebody derives a pruta's worth of benefit from consecrated property, mosif chomesh, he needs to add a chomesh to it. Vahagoza el tchaveiro shava pruta. And if somebody robs something worth a pruta from somebody, vinishbalo, and then he claims falsely that he didn't steal it, and then later admits to it, mosif chomesh. Now, you're going to say, well, there's many more than five things mentioned here. It's really five categories. So the first category is all the things that are basically given to a kohen, right? The trumat maser, the trumat maser shel jamai, the chal and the bikurim, that's category one. The second category is the netzer revi'i and the maser sheni. The third category is anybody who redeems anything that's consecrated. The fourth category is somebody who derives a pruta's worth of benefit from consecrated property. You have to add a fifth to it. And this is the law of Me'ila, which we've talked about before, which is inadvertently deriving benefit from something that was already consecrated. And the fifth category is the one of Gezel. So these are the five categories in which somebody needs to add a fifth. Now, the Gemara wants to start off by analyzing one particular case, Amar Rava, Kasha Leila Rabbi Elazar Trumat Maser Shel Demai. Right? This, the category of Trumat Maser Shel Demai, was difficult for Rabbi Elazar, right? Why a non-Kohen would be basically charged for eating Trumat Maser Shel Demai? Because that only is hekdesh under rabbinic law and it isn't under biblical law. V'chi asu chachamim chizuk l'divrayim k'shel Torah. Did the rabbis strengthen their own enactments as those of the Torah? Right? We would say no. So why are you charging somebody for something that just is considered holy under rabbinic law, but not under biblical law? So the Gemara answers and says, Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Shmuel. So Rav Nachman said in the name of Shmuel, Hamani, whose opinion does this Mishnah reflect? Rabbi Meir, it's the opinion of Rabbi Meir, Da'ama asu chachamim chizuk l'divrayim k'shel Torah, who actually did say that sometimes the rabbis did strengthen their own enactments as much as those with Torah. So they would, in this case, actually impose the chomesh, even in a case that has kedusha to it because of a rabbinic enactment. And then they basically quote a brisa to prove this. D'Tanya, we learned it a brisa, hamivi get mimidinat hayam. Somebody, if an agent brings a bill of divorce from abroad, netanola velo amar la bifnei nichtab bifnei nechtam, and he gives it to the woman without saying to her, it was written in my presence and signed in my presence, and then she remarried, yotzi v'havlad mamzer. The second man actually has to divorce her, and any child that was born there is a mamzer. Divrei Rabbi Meir. Those are the words of Rabbi Meir. So in other words, because according to Rabbi Meir, since the shaliach didn't fulfill the rabbinic requirement of making the actual declaration of saying who the edim, right, that it was written in my presence and signed in my presence, she's still considered married. On her second marriage, therefore, it's an adulterous relationship. So that's the point where we see that he basically is applying a very strict standard to really what's a rabbinic enactment. The Chachamim say the offspring of this union is not a mamzer. Kate said, yaseh, what should the shaliach do if he forgot to make that declaration? Yitlenu mimenu, you should take the bill of divorce back from her. V'yachzor v'yitnenu la bifnei shnayim, and give it back to her with two witnesses. V'yomar la bifnei nichtav v'bifnei nichtam, and he should say, it was written in my presence and signed in my presence, okay? Ula Rabbi Meir, and according to Rabbi Meir, Mishum delo amar la bifnai nichtav ubifnai nechtam. Can it be said that just because the agent didn't say to the woman, it was written in my presence and signed in my presence, Yotzi v'avlad mamzer, he has to send her, you know, his divorcer and the offspring is a mamzer? In Rabbi Meir latame, yes, Rabbi Meir follows his own reasoning. Da amar Rav Hamnuna mashmei to Ula, for Rav Hamnuna said in the raid of Ula, Omar Haya Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir would say, "Kol mishanat matbea shatavu chachamim begitin." Anyone who deviates from the procedure instituted by the rabbis for gets, yotzi v'avlad mamzer. This man has to divorce her, and it's the child's considered a mamzer. So this basically supports what the Gemara was saying, that according to Rabbi Meir, that the rabbis did try to strengthen their takanot that they made as much as that of the Torah. From here, the Gemara is going to quote two Mishnahs, which, when read together, seem to actually refute this notion of Rabbi Meir. So just pay attention to that. But I think it's very interesting to see where we see this concept of the fifth as laid out very, very nicely in the Mishnah. And, you know, that we have this sort of in-between category of Trumat Maser Shel Demai, which doesn't seem to fit. The rest of them, almost all of them have a biblical orshin, you know, but this particular category, the Trumat Maser Shel Demai, definitely seems to be rabbinic in origin, and that's also interesting. That's our DAF discussion for the day. Rank us, review us on all major podcasts. Thank you to Reverend Michelle Farber for hosting us on the Hadron website. Let us know what you thought about this DAF on our Talking Talmud Facebook page, and until tomorrow, go and learn.